at 3:38 on a lovely Wednesday afternoon. For the record, present are Chairman Rochberg, Representative Sanders, Representative Bryce, Representative Cabina. And we do have a quorum present for testimony. With that, we'll take a brief edit on the record.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's take up House Bill 218 at this time. One we have had substantial work and endeavor on. And I'll double check here. The purpose of today's hearing on this bill will be to endeavor, if we are able to, take conformance with the activities on the Senate bill. It's the intention of the chair today to pass this out of the committee and move it to the House Finance Committee, where it'll have final consideration and take up either of the both vehicles. The Senate bill will be referred tomorrow to the Finance Committee, so that's why we need to move this out today. And there were three amendments, one adopted in the Senate Finance Committee and two adopted on the floor, that we'd like to take a little bit of testimony on and see whether we want to take those up. And Janet, did you distribute those to the committee members? Let's see here. Oh, we have it marked as the Duncan Amendment. Oh, this is, but this is his amendment.
The hold is hostage.
I'm trying to sort these out here. They're being distributed. I believe, if I'm not corrected, the amendment marked B.1 board of today could be referred to generically as the Duncan Amendment. Apparently some changes here technically in the amendment as it relate to the version adopted on the floor. The second one, B.2, could be referred to as the Donnelly Amendment for purposes right now. And amendment B.3 is the Senate Finance Amendment for generic purposes. At this time, if I could ask Ms. Burke to come forward and give us some background. But first, Ms. Burke, is there anything else you wish to add to our voluminous testimony on House Bill 218?
That's my sincere desire to see this moved out.
Good. Well, first, I believe it's the amendment marked B.3, and the committee will mark up B.3 and call that, for the record, amendment number one. Now, this particular amendment, Ms. Burke, is related to a rental car insurance.
That's correct.
And could you give us the department's position on this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the division has no objection to this amendment. It clarifies the order of which policy goes first in settlement of claims.
Very good. Are there any questions of the committee of Ms. Burke on amendment number one? We'll put the amendment number one on the table for further consideration today. We'll take up amendment number two, which is B.2. As I referred to, the Donnelly Amendment, and mark that as committee amendment number two. We have the amendment sponsor here, but as long as you're at the table, Ms. Burke, could you give us the department's opinion on this particular amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the division does not wish to take a position one way or another. We wish to go on the record as saying that this is a highly controversial area, and as I have testified, it is a subject that is before the Supreme Court in the state of Alaska right now as a result of two contradictory decisions that have been rendered on this issue. The state has filed an amicus brief in this issue, and because this amendment is so controversial, I am very, very reluctant to take a position in favor of it or against it, which might jeopardize our bill in total.
Oh, okay, Ms. Burke, the perhaps it may be more appropriate at this time if we could take some testimony from Senator Donnelly on this, and then you could rejoin us for further discussion. Is there anybody here today, Ms. Burke, from the Department of Law or anything else to speak on that?
No, Senator, I'm Representative Eisen.
Thank you very much for the promotion. Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've asked Mike Ford to join us.
Too. He's on the way, we sure. Understand. We try to go.
First of all, I would point out, listening carefully to the director's testimony, the reason for their neutrality on the particular amendment is not the policy call involved. It's the question of the importance of the rest of the bill to them, and that's understandable. But from a policy point of view, the Department of Law has intervened in that case in support of the position that's represented by this amendment. So the state's official policy is to advocate for this amendment and the effects of this amendment to be the actual status of existing law. What this is all about is it's about underinsured motor vehicle coverage. And back about 1983 or so, when we were working on mandatory auto insurance, we added for the first time in Alaska coverage for underinsured vehicle coverage. Up to that time, we'd had uninsured vehicle coverage, but not underinsured. And what that meant was that if you were hit by somebody who didn't have insurance, you had coverage. But if you were hit by somebody who had, let's say they had a $100 insurance policy, you didn't have any protection against the difference between what their policy covered and what your policy covered, because they weren't uninsured, they were simply underinsured. So we added underinsured to the list of types of products you could buy in Alaska or were mandated for offer in Alaska. One of the results of that was, though, since we had mandatory insurance, was people typically bought underinsured coverage for up to $100,000. Well, since everybody was required to have mandatory auto insurance, and mandatory auto insurance tended to be for, what's the minimum amount now?
Four.
50.
Right.
Well, since, but for multiple events, it's 100.
Right.
Right.
5,100.
Right, 5,100. So if you bought this insurance, you were covered for up to that amount of money. But since people had mandatory auto insurance and the auto insurance had a minimum legal amount, frequently people bought up to that amount, so they actually didn't get any additional coverage as long as the people who hit them actually had insurance. Although they were paying for this, all they were really insuring themselves was the possibility that they had a sub legal limit amount or no insurance. And so about 8 years ago, was it, Mike? I sponsored legislation that would provide that when you bought underinsured motorist coverage, it stacked so that what you were buying was coverage in addition to what whoever hit you had. That's first party insurance. That means you're buying this insurance to protect yourself against somebody else not being able to pay you the damage they did to you. Okay, so and so if you had $125,000 worth of damages under the old system and you had $100,000 worth of underinsured motorist coverage, and they had $100,000 worth of coverage, you were out $25,000 of legitimate damages. But under the new system that we adopted about 8 years ago, your coverage would extend all the way up to $200,000, and you would get compensated for your actual total damages. There's no double recovery. That's not a question here. It's only for what your actual damages were. It extended your coverage above and beyond what the other people who hit you had, and you paid for that, right? So that was about 8 years ago, and everybody knew that's what was intended. Mr. Ford was the drafter. I was the sponsor. That's what we wanted. Unfortunately, sometime, I guess it's about 4 or 5 years ago, 4 years ago, one insurance company decided they just didn't want to pay that. And rates had been established for that coverage based on losses in Alaska. And people paid insurance based on that was what they were supposed to get under the law. An insurance company said, we don't want to pay that. And in fact, since you haven't amended this other section of existing insurance law, 2822-201, which was an existing law at the time, that I'll let Mr. Ford explain, which we didn't think at the time was necessary to amend, we're not going to pay. We're not going to stack. And a district federal court judge agreed with them and actually said that, told me what I intended as the sponsor was not to stack. Well, of course, being the person who did the law and Mr. Ford being the person who drafted it at my request, we know that was wrong because we know what we intended. We said it all the way through the process. There's no other reason to adopt the change we made unless that's what we intended to do. And in fact, in a subsequent federal district court case, another federal district judge said just the opposite. He said he couldn't believe that the other judge ruled that way because it was obvious that this is what the legislature wanted. So it went up to the Ninth Circuit, who rightfully, and at that point the state did an amicus brief arguing the same thing that I'm arguing to you today, Mr. Chairman, that these policies should have stacked because that was the intent of the legislature when we passed the law. And that, and besides, the federal government's got no business dealing with this because this is a state law issue. The Ninth Circuit agreed and certified the case back to the state Supreme Court for where it is before them now. I feel very confident the court's going to agree that that was, that, you know, it's very clear from the record what we intended and that this is a stretch of an argument. But this was the argument that was used by the insurance company that blocked payment. So currently in Alaska, we've got some insurance companies that are under court order to pay this and some that are refusing to pay because they were got the first judge to rule that way, is my understanding of where we're at. This would just clarify and restore us very clearly to what should be the status quo and say that for underinsured and uninsured claims in Alaska, policies stack. So the computer, the consumers are getting the protection they've paid for and has been supposedly programmed into the rate base for since this law was changed. Mr. Ford can, I think, explain better to me why this is what we have to do. Can you do that, Mike?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mike Ford. I'm an attorney with the Division of Legal Services. I think what you've heard so far, to my recollection, is correct. What we have here really is an argument by an insurance company that was accepted by a court. And the amendment that I believe that is before you is intended to clear up any argument that, in fact, the policies are not going to stack as he has described. So there are some changes to existing law. I think at the time that we attempted to stack them, we didn't believe these were issues. But apparently a court, at least one court, believed they were. So.
Excuse me. Senator Donnelly, are you muted somewhere?
Yeah, I'm muted on the floor of the Senate, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just say that this is very, very important to me and to tons, many, many consumers out there. Because people have been paying for this coverage, and now they're being denied this coverage even though they paid for it. This was absolutely intent Mr. Ford and myself when we did this law. We're here to tell you that's what we did. All the testimony before every committee was that's what we intended to do. It passed, the legislature was in place. We never thought that this other existing section of law was in conflict with that, but some court bought that argument. And we ought to clarify this. This is an appropriate vehicle to do it in. We ought to fix this problem. It's our last chance to do it this session and clear it up once and for all. This is the correct public policy call, and we ought to take this opportunity to fix it. It passed the Senate overwhelmingly. I think it was 18-1, if there even was a one in the Senate, I think this amendment passed.
Well, Senator Donnelly, we know that your presence is needed elsewhere. I think I can speak for the committee that you're in good hands at the Labor and Commerce Committee. So
thank you. Thank
Mr. Ford can answer some of our other questions if you have to leave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The questions of Mr. Ford. Mr. Ford, would you agree with Senator Donnelly's analysis of the circumstances surrounding the need for this amendment?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ford, would you believe that by passage of this amendment in this bill would make moot the cause of actions before the state Supreme Court?
I believe it would resolve that question. That's correct.
Would it have a retroactive effect, or would the lawsuits go forward because of the interpretation at the time?
Well, it wouldn't have any retroactive effect, no. It would only apply to policies of insurance that are entered into or renewed on or after the effective date of the bill. But it would resolve the issue. And in those cases where companies are continuing to dispute that, I think that upon renewal or issue of new policies, they're not going to have that argument. So this is really the best approach to take to resolve the issue, if in fact that's what the legislature wishes to do, to go this way.
Good question, Mr. Ford. Thank you, Mr. Ford. There is the other amendment. If you could stick around for a few minutes, we'll try to get to that as rapidly as possible. And is there anybody here that wishes to testify on amendment number 2? Les Meyer, would you like to? Yeah. Yes, could you identify yourself for the record?
I will, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Lesmeyer, and I'm here on behalf of State Farm. I'd like to explain to you what this amendment really does, because what it does is something far different than what has just been explained to you. And I think that the difficulty that this amendment creates for the committee is that it is an amendment that hasn't been heard before any other committee. It involves a complex area of the law and is going to have a negative effect in terms of doing what the senator wants to do. And I think I can explain that to you and do so clearly. I'd like to go back a little bit and talk just briefly about uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage, because the proposal for mandated offers of uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage was a proposal that we made to the legislature back in 1983 in recognition of the fact that we were going to have mandatory automobile insurance. And even if you have mandatory automobile insurance, there are a certain percentage of people that are going to be uninsured or underinsured. And as a result of that, the legislature enacted law requiring mandated offers of uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage. Now, it's very important that you understand what we mean by underinsured motorist coverage, because the way it was defined in statute is that a person would go out and choose how much underinsured motorist coverage to purchase. If they chose to purchase $100,000 of underinsured motorist coverage, then by statute, an underinsured motorist was defined as someone who had liability coverage of less than that. In other words, if you bought protection for yourself of $100,000 of underinsured motorist coverage and somebody hits you with $50,000, then they would be underinsured based on the coverage that you chose to buy. And that definition is contained in the Alaska statutes. And that was how one determined whether a person was underinsured. And the way this coverage started out, it was what is called difference in limits coverage. If the person that hit you had $50,000 of coverage and you had $100,000 of underinsured coverage, what you got from your own carrier was a difference in the limits, in other words, an additional $50,000. Senator Donnelly, in 1990, changed that, and he changed it to be excess coverage. But what he didn't change was he didn't change the definition of what is an underinsured motorist. And so it's not a question of stacking, and that's not the basis for these decisions that were made by the federal district court judges. The basis of their decisions was how is an underinsured motorist defined? And what they held is that if somebody hits you and their policy limits are equal to what you chose to purchase or greater than what you chose to purchase as underinsured motorist coverage, then the coverage isn't triggered. And they base that on a specific provision of the law, and it's black and white. And so what you have is you have an example of the havoc that is wreaked when these issues are not clearly thought out, because we do have one federal judge that has said one thing, another federal judge that has said another. And I would encourage you not to go down this road again, because I can point out to you how this amendment is going down that road again. If you look at the amendment and you look at the very first line, it says that this would require that uninsured and underinsured motorists, motor vehicle insurance apply to the claims of an insured even if other policy limits are not exhausted. Now think about that for a second. Think about that. Because the reason we had underinsured motorist coverage to begin with was to make a person whole. In other words, if the other person doesn't have adequate insurance. Why in the world do you want to make underinsured motorist coverage apply if the other person's limits are not exhausted? I don't know the answer to that, and I would like to know the answer to that, because that is ludicrous in terms of how we define underinsured motorist coverage. It makes no sense.
But can I interject right
here?
Is this a question of the priority of where the funds would be coming from?
Well, it's a question not only of priority, but in terms of how you define someone that's an underinsured motorist. The whole purpose of the coverage has been if somebody doesn't have adequate insurance, but if they haven't exhausted the other insurance, then how do you decide whether they're underinsured? It takes what this coverage was intended to be and turns it on its head to something that it wasn't intended to be. The second thing that this does is it changes in one part of the statutes, but not in other parts of the statute, again, how the coverage applies. They say that it applies to, again, the bodily injury, sickness, disease, even if the limits of the liability bonds or policies that apply have not been used up. But in AS 282445, the statutes say that uninsured and underinsured coverages may not apply to bodily injury, sickness, death, until the limits of the liability of all bodily injury and property damage liability bonds have been used up. So you're building in an irreconcilable conflict in the statutes with this law. The third thing that you're doing is it says that the insurer shall in each instance receive a credit against the insured's total damages for amounts actually received by the insured. I don't know what they're talking about there. A credit from what? You know, the way this coverage typically works is an insured makes a claim against the uninsured motorist, receives coverage from the uninsured or underinsured motorist, which isn't adequate, and then files a claim against their own insurer for what's left. And how you do that under this law is not clear, and I guarantee you it will be litigated to death, because It's not clear. You cannot get the answer from this statute. And what you're doing is you're creating an amendment that is fundamentally inconsistent with the mandatory insurance law that we passed back in 1983, the amendments to the Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act that were made back in 1983. And you just can't do it. So if their intent truly is to just change the trigger, which was the decision that was made in these different federal courts, there's a pretty easy way to do that. This has consequences that are far more significant. And nobody talked about the repealers that are on page 2 of this amendment. If you look at the repealers, there are things that are repealed that have been on the books for 14 years that there's no good reason to repeal. For example, 282445C was repealed. And the only thing that subsection does is it determines priority of payments. It doesn't decide have any effect on how much is paid. It just determines priorities. The definition of an underinsured motorist was repealed. And without a definition, how do we decide if somebody is uninsured? How do we write that coverage as to whether they're underinsured or not? Some of the things that were not repealed is if you take a look at 282445E, which again talks about what uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage may apply to. It is directly in conflict with the provision that's in the bill right now. Directly in conflict. So what we've got is we've got a piece of an amendment here that has not been thought out very well and doesn't really do what they sought to do. I think this creates huge problems, and it will ultimately turn out to be a problem for every motorist that chooses to buy this coverage for a lot of different reasons. And what I would encourage you to do, Mr. Chairman, is to not adopt this amendment. This is an issue that should rise or fall on its own. It shouldn't be part of an omnibus bill that is essentially non-controversial. And it should be part of legislation that proceeds on its own merits. The other thing that I'll just tell you, the effect of doing this, if you were to do it right, according to and change the trigger, according to our figures, it's going to increase the cost of underinsured motorist coverage to everyone in Alaska by in excess of $20 per year. And so, I mean, even if you were to do it right, and I think that this is an important enough concept to, if you're going to do it, you ought to do it right. And that's what I would say to Senator Donnelly. If he really wants to do this, I would suggest that he introduce a bill that goes through the committee process rather than attach it to something that, like the omnibus bill and the Kennedy-Katzenbaum bill, which we all know needs to get resolved.
Thank you, Mr. Lesmeyer. Having no committee, I cannot ask you. I cannot ask anyone to ask you a question. Mr. Lesmeyer, tell me, has your firm, after the 1990 amendments to the insurance code, as it relates to this issue, have they undertaken to do their rating and underwriting to accommodate what's referred to as the stack effect as far as their payouts?
I think there was an initial rating change to deal with the stacking, but not to deal with the trigger change. The trigger change, there was no change in trigger, and my belief, and I can confirm this, is that we did not rate for the change in trigger. And my belief is that this coverage has been a very big loss for us. In other words, we are losing money on this coverage.
Is that why you say your premiums may go up as much as $20 per
yes.
policy? Is that what you said?
Now? Yes. I could have a moment. I could find the exact number that the actuary gave me. We believe the change would be an average annual rate increase of $22 per car.
$22 per car? Per car?
Yes.
That's like per policy, every car you rent. Okay. Okay.
And, you know, the point I really want to make to the chair on this issue is that if it's a policy call of the legislature to make this change the trigger, and which is the real issue, it's not the stacking issue, it's changing the trigger, then that can be done. But it ought to be done properly, and it ought to be done carefully. This amendment does not do that, and that's our concern. It goes much further than that, and it fundamentally changes underinsured motorist coverage in Alaska. And it changes it in a way that's not clear, because there are conflicting provisions, and even on its face, it is unclear how we would apply this law. And let me give you an example. Say somebody is involved in an automobile accident. Do they immediately make a claim against their own insurer for underinsured motorist coverage at the same time that they're suing the other party to determine the extent of their damages and the allocation of fault? Do they maintain two lawsuits at the same time? How do they do that? The mechanics of this are not clear. And
if there's pending litigation to prove there's a wrongdoer in a case, doesn't your company provide under the uninsured or underinsured motorist provision the out-of-pocket expenses to your customer?
Well, under uninsured motorist coverage, that coverage does not come into play until there is an underinsured motorist. In other words, until there is a showing that there isn't adequate insurance available by the third party. And that's when it comes into play. And that's the purpose of the coverage. The purpose of the coverage has always been if somebody doesn't have adequate insurance, in other words, and that's why it was defined so carefully three or four different places in the statutes. And that whole concept is being changed by this legislation.
Let me understand this then, that you could have a hypothetical situation given our minimum limit of $50,000 in coverage, where you had a injured party that had, say, in excess of $200,000 worth of medical expenses because of an injury received by another party, and would have to seek his own coverage, and assuming he had, let's say, $500,000 worth of coverage for uninsured motorists, whatever, more than adequate to cover it, that your firm wouldn't make any payment towards that until there was an adjudication as to fault?
Well, I think you really would have to look at the specifics of that, because if liability were clear on that instance, in other words, there's no dispute about the liability of the third party, and there's no dispute about the damages, that the damages are clearly in excess of the policy limit, those are the easy cases to resolve. And so I think that's a case that would be resolved fairly quickly and fairly easily.
Well, bad hypothetical then. Should make it tougher on you. We are talking about a policy call here. And before we wrap up your testimony, could you, in a nutshell, describe what changing the trigger is so we could get the chairman can grasp that completely?
Well,
it defining who is insured or underinsured?
It's defining who is an underinsured motorist.
Mr. Lesmer, okay, go ahead. Excuse me.
The way the law is written now, an underinsured motor vehicle is one in which the liability limits on that vehicle are less than the amount that the person chose to purchase for uninsured or underinsured coverage. In other words, if you purchased $500,000 of uninsured or underinsured coverage, and the person that hits you has $100,000 of liability coverage, then you have been hit by a motorist that by definition is underinsured. You choose that. You make that choice in terms of the policy limit that you choose, and it's dependent upon the limit of liability then of the person that hits you.
And in terms of your, when you were doing the underwriting, I'm really disturbed to hear your testimony about the $22 increase, when in fact the policy call was made by the legislature in 1990.
That's not how we underwrote this, and you know the $22 increase is based on our experience under this coverage. I mean, I can tell you that our experience has not been very good with the underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage, and let me give you an example. I have no accidents, and I just got my premium notice a few days ago, and I have $500,000 of liability coverage and $500,000 of UM-UIM. And my UM-UIM coverage now is almost as expensive as my liability coverage.
Well, someday we'll probably have no-fault insurance because of that.
Well, you know something, that's that's a different issue. But,
yes.
You know, the point that I just want to make is, again, there's a way, if your policy call, Mr. Chairman, is that we want to make this pure access and we want to change the trigger so that the trigger comes into effect, regardless of your policy limit, it comes into effect when the person that hits you doesn't have enough insurance. There's a way to do that, and there's a way to do that right. This way is not the way.
Mr. Lesmer, we have a lot of things to do today, and I really appreciate your testimony and giving a little liberality here. I suggest that this bill is going to be moving to the Finance Committee, so if you think that this could be corrected, you better burn some midnight oil, because it's already in the Senate bill no matter what we do today.
I understand.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ford, could you just return to the table very briefly and... And let the record show that Representative Ryan and Representative Kadri are in attendance. I guess I'm kind of concerned about the repealers on the back and the effective date where they did some numbering there. Are you confident that those are all okay?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe
I damage, like particularly about 116 on line 7 there?
Yeah, these are simply renumbering section references, and
okay.
Those are all correct. I might just point out, regarding this amendment on the stacking issue, I think I have to agree with Mr. Lesmeyer that you should look at this carefully. And if, in fact, there is a narrower way to affect the stacking, you know, provision, then I think that's a good idea. The problems we've had in this area of the law have existed because I think there hasn't been enough input and there hasn't been enough time spent in crafting the changes. So if in fact the policy of the legislature is to affect the trigger and the trigger only, and there's concern about the additional changes made, that's probably a good criticism.
Well, Mr. Ford, I mean, you're talking about your own handiwork here, and
correct.
So you're positing that the intent of the amendment before us is not exactly on point as to the trigger. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying is this is a complex area of the law, and the criticisms that you've heard today from Mr. Lesmeyer may be well taken. All I'm saying is, it may be prudent to examine his comments and determine if, in fact, there is an additional effect here beyond the trigger that I was not aware of. If that's the case, then it might be prudent for the committee to consider revising the amendment to narrow its scope to only affect the trigger. I do share that concern, and I think that one of the reasons that we've had such difficulty in this area of the law is because of the unintended consequences.
Well, Mr. Ford, we'd like to talk about the one other amendment here, but I'd suggest you might have, could you do it in 45 minutes?
Revise it or talk about the other one?
No, the revise it.
Possibly.
Well, with that, let's put the amendment number 2 on the table. And Representative Cowdery first, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just, this was, I'm sorry for being late, but I had another, chaired another committee, but this amendment, and I didn't even bring my packet, so I assume this is the amendment from Senator Donnelly?
That's correct.
Correct.
I had a hard time really, and I'm glad that I wasn't the only one that maybe had a full-time understanding, and it would seem to me that the possibility, of course, you're chairman, but that maybe we should not adopt this, and if it goes, I don't think it would make this issue go to the conference committee, but I think this is pretty complex. It's just a statement on my part, and I'm not real sure exactly what this does and does not do. And I'm glad I'm sorry I come in here late, but what I heard is maybe some others are not sure, too. So anyway, that was a comment.
Okay, well, at this point, we'll put down Amendment 2 on the table and move to Amendment Number 3. Now, Amendment Number 3 was marked B.1. And, as a matter of fact, Mr. Ford, if you could actually help us. Now, we have a B.1 here.
Yes.
Which will be marked for Committee Amendment Number 3.
Is that B.1?
Right. No, 1. That's two. B.1 is Amendment Number 3 now. Now, Mr. Ford, could you take us through this amendment? And also, I heard a whisper in my ear, but I'm not sure. Is this different than what was adopted on the Senate floor?
Mr. Chairman, again, this is sort of illustrates some of the issues and the complexities we have in dealing with some of these issues. But this is an amendment that was adopted on the Senate floor. It was offered by Senator Duncan. It's intended to allow someone who wishes to exclude a member of their household or relative from coverage. And there are provisions in our law which require you to cover, the policy does apply to all people who live in the same household. And there was some belief, at least on Senator Duncan's part, that you are unable to remove someone that you wish to have excluded. So this provision would allow you to do that. You can exclude someone if you do not wish to have them on your policy.
President Kennedy.
But if I'm correct in thinking, of course, I guess it could be a minor or an adult person you could exclude, but if it was a minor and you chose to exclude, the parent would still be responsible whether it was insured or not. Am I right in thinking that?
Through the chair, no, I don't believe that's correct.
You don't think that the parent of a minor would be responsible or liable? Or something that minor, that's what I'm asking. Do you?
Yeah, the common law is that you have no liability from a parent-child relationship. You have perhaps negligence on your part. You could be sued for that. But simply from the fact that you are the parent, no. There's no vicarious liability there.
Mr. Ford, though, I think the testimony will bring out, though, that that car, automobile is insured.
Correct.
By the parents, if you will, and that hypothetical, and the insurer would have to pay off, even though the excluded member of the family had not been underwritten, nor the premium adjusted for that coverage.
Well, that may be the case, because you also provide coverage for someone who uses the vehicle with your permission.
That's correct.
Right.
Presumably, those that are in your family can, with or without your permission, be more likely to use the car than, let's say, a guest.
Yes, this may be one of these provisions, again, that has some unintended consequences. You may find that the underwriting for that, as a result of this, may, the premiums may go up.
Just at this point, that's a, where I can really appreciate the concerns that were raised on the Senate floor about individuals. My fear is that this will not be a positive thing for not only the insurance industry in the state, but also for the parents of people not understanding the full ramifications of this. And although I think that there is an ability through artful drafting to reach the goal of this particular amendment, that this isn't it. And no disrespect meant, because I understand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this does accomplish the intent of Senator Duncan.
Well, I'm not denying that.
Yeah. Whether that is an intent that the committee would support, I can't say. I would point out this amendment is slightly different than the Senate version in that it amends our mandatory insurance law. And the provision in Senate Bill 104 actually amends a chapter that deals with it's a chapter that basically kicks in after you have an accident. We have dual insurance provisions in this state, and I would recommend that if in fact you adopt this amendment, that a similar provision be added to chapter to AS 2820 as well, so you'll have mirror provisions. I can expand on that if you'd like. But.
Well, why don't we allow you to do that if anybody cares to do that in House Finance, and perhaps your talents and efforts would be better directed to the other amendment. Are there any further questions on this amendment? We're going to table amendment number 3 at this point and ask them, before we do that, Mr. Ford, if you, your testimony, any further questions, Mr. Ford? Hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony, sir, and if there's any way in the next few minutes you could bring some light on amendment number 2, this committee would appreciate that, and I'm sure Senator Donnelly would, too.
Yes.
Thank you very much, sir.
Sure.
And before we conclude this, perhaps Mr. Lesmeyer, if you could speak to amendment number 3, or as anybody else wishes to speak to that. Ms. Burke, would you care to speak to it?
I just wanted to observe that. I agree with you. It seems in criminal law, nobody's responsible for anything. In civil law, everybody's responsible for everybody. So I think this would be a good place to put that right where you did on the table.
Right. Well, we have 2 other amendments we'll be taking up when we get a quorum. But at this point, I've got some real concerns about that. That being the case, I'd like to take action on this bill, but in as much as we don't have a quorum, we can't do so. We'll take a brief at ease. We'll call the meeting of the Labor and Commerce Committee back to order. In as much as session to consider activity as relate to House Bill 266 and take testimony from the teleconference witnesses that are online. No other action will be taken on House Bill 218, 266, or 209 today because of lack of quorum, unless we get lucky. With that, this meeting is recessed.